Today in our time together, I would like to talk to you about stress and stress disorders. As we think about stress, certainly none of us are strangers to stress and its effect upon us. We know how it feels to be under stress and the effect that it can have both on our thinking and our emotions and on our performance. In our talk today, what I would like to do is to cover some background issues on stress and then examine what you might expect a caller who might contact you to say as they might be suffering from some sort of stress or stress disorder. And then finally, consider some things that you might feel helpful in trying to be of help to someone who might call you. First of all, let's turn to some background issues. What is stress? When we think about defining stress, it's hard to put it into words at times. Stress is, simply a good definition, is that which places a demand upon us as people to cope. Now that's a very good definition. It broadens our understanding of stress. I'd like to consider the first part of that. First of all, stress places demands. That is a common experience as well. When we experience a conflict at work or we're late for a meeting and have a flat tire, we experience that demand that it places on us to do something. Well, what may be demanding for you may not be demanding for me. What I find easy to do may not be so easy for you to do. So that's the first component of a good understanding of stress. In some ways, stress is in the eye of the beholder. That is, what the person, the individual, experiences as placing a demand on he or she is that which is stressful. Stress is, therefore, that which places a demand upon the person. Now that second component of the definition, demand upon the person, is also very critical. That is, when we face those demanding experiences, several changes occur within us. First of all, we have physiological changes, and all of us have experienced that feeling of a pounding heart, perhaps sweaty hands, or that knot in the stomach that comes along with the demand that stress places upon us. So stress is that which places a demand upon the person to cope. Now, also, when we consider the idea of stress, most of us tend to think of stressful events as those events which are perceived only as negative, like the flat tire that I mentioned earlier. But research has shown that stress can come from both positive and negative events. A famous researcher in stress, a man by the name of Hans Selye, has found in his research of how events impact people that sometimes positive events can be just as stressful as negative events. Those of us who've experienced marriage might find that as a good example. All of the details and energy put into getting married and the day of the wedding and that initial period of adjustment for most of us was quite stressful, even though we saw that event as a positive thing. Another positive event that Mr. Selye has found that is also very stressful in a positive sense is the birth of a child. When we have a newborn come into our home, it changes our routine, the way we relate to our spouse, our neighbors, our work, and certainly how much sleep we get. A positive event producing stress. So stress is that which places a demand upon the organism or person to cope, whether that be positive or negative. Now, a second concern when we think of background issues to stress is the idea of stress and physiology. Stress affects us in a physiological sense. This is done in two ways. The first way is when we think of major stressors. Those are the large events, like going into work, finding out that there's layoffs, and you're one of the people that will be laid off. That's a major stressor, and of course, its impact is immediately felt. Another category or type of stressor is that which I will call chronic stress. Those are the kinds of stressors that are low-grade. It's like a low-grade fever, but it's chronic. It's ongoing. Researchers into stress have found out that it's not only the large events that affect us in a powerful way, but also those chronic events, those little nagging problems that seem to never go away, like the conflict that we might find with a workmate or with a spouse, chronic financial problems. Those kinds of things impact us in that ongoing or additive way. Stress also produces arousal, physiological arousal. Remember the last time that you were in a stressful experience, perhaps when you had to speak in front of a large crowd or had to go in and talk to your boss about a conflict that you were having? As soon as you step into the office, immediately you experience that state of heightened arousal. That's due to a lot of physiological changes that occur with stress. Our adrenal gland begins pumping adrenaline into our system, our skeletal muscles tighten, and we go into that heightened state of arousal. Stress produces arousal in a physiological sense. Because it produces arousal, we have to cope with that arousal or adapt to it somehow. Researchers into stress have found that there are sort of three stages to adapting to stress. It's called the general adaptation syndrome. And it's not unlike how the body deals with a biological stressor such as a disease or an illness. The first step in that adaptation syndrome is what's called an alarm reaction. That's when the body physiologically sends off the alarm bells. That's when we get that pop of adrenaline in our system, when we become very much aware of what's going on around us. We might feel the muscles in the back of our neck tighten. We might feel that tingling sensation, feel our heart pounding, and also experience perspiration. That's the alarm reaction. When we face a stressor, even if it's a chronic stressor, we go into a heightened state of awareness. That's the alarm reaction. What the alarm reaction does is mobilizes our body to cope with the stress and give us the added physiological energy and heightened state of awareness to either fight the stressor, that is, adapt to it, or flee from it, that is, avoid it. The alarm reaction is the first stage. The second stage in adapting to the stressor is that stage that we'll call the stage of resistance, where we resist in a longer term sense whatever stressor that we're facing. So we find out there are layoffs at work, we go into a heightened state of awareness, that is the alarm reaction, and then suddenly the alarm reaction begins to subside a little bit. We don't feel that powerful surge of adrenaline anymore, but we're in a state where we're kind of constantly concerned or worried about the events at work. That is, they never really go away, so we're driving home from work and we find ourselves thinking about that and suddenly notice that we're gripping the wheel tighter. We lay awake at night when we're trying to go to sleep and find ourselves concerned or worried about the events at work. That is, we're trying to resist or cope with the stress, and usually this occurs for a longer period of time. If somehow we don't somehow find a way to deal with the stressor or to resolve the problem, what happens, researchers have shown, is that we go into sort of a stage of exhaustion. That is where we get burned out. Now, we've all been there as well. When we've been trying to deal with a problem on an ongoing basis, and finally we just feel like I'll never be able to solve this. With a stage of exhaustion, oftentimes comes a sense of hopelessness and discouragement. Researchers have found after the stage of exhaustion, most of us go into the alarm reaction for one last-ditch effort to come to terms with the stressor, but we only can do that for a very short period, and if somehow we don't resolve the issue, we go into a deeper state of exhaustion. Researchers speculate, like with physical disease, if we hit that second stage of exhaustion, we usually experience major problems, sometimes even death. So there's an attempt by the person to deal with the stress in terms of the stress reaction in those three stages: alarm, resistance, and then exhaustion. Well, as you might expect, not only does stress impact us physiologically, but stress impacts our emotions as well. Some of the emotional correlates of trying to deal with stress are, and I'll list some of those for you, first of all, how it affects us in terms of our thinking. When we're under a lot of stress, it affects the way that we think about ourselves, the way we think about our families, and the way we think about our jobs. Remember the last time that you were under a lot of stress at work. After a while, when you woke up in the morning, you started to think about work and dread going in. Maybe at one point that was a job that you enjoyed, but due to the chronic stress, you find yourself dreading going into the office, tired even thinking about it. So stress affects our thinking. Another way that stress affects us, more in an emotional domain, is that we become irritable. We find ourselves having a short fuse. Another emotional correlate of being under stress is depression. That's that sad feeling of being down or discouraged, feeling blue, thinking about the events that are producing stress for us. Another emotional reaction oftentimes is a deep sense of hopelessness and powerlessness. That carries the idea that this stress is going to be there, I'm never going to be able to change the situation, there's nothing that I can do. So stress produces powerful impact in us both physiologically and emotionally. It affects the way that we see the world, ourselves and others, and sometimes leaves us, if it's chronic, with a sense of depression and hopelessness and powerlessness. Well, I would like to think a little bit about common areas of stress. Where are some of the common areas that research shows that we find ourselves facing stress? Well, many of these will not be a surprise to you, and I've already mentioned a few of those. One of the most common areas that we experience stress is in the workplace. The workplace demands that we cope with demands placed on us in terms of both the tasks presented to us at work, also the relationships presented to us at work. All of us have found ourselves trying to work with a boss that demands too much of us in too short a time, or coworkers that somehow are just difficult to get along with, and we find ourselves going home at the end of the day feeling stressed, feeling that sense of exhaustion, feeling the tightness in our neck, and so on. A second area, key area, that stress often pops up is in the area of interpersonal relationships. That is, what happens between us and someone else. Dealing with conflict, or sometimes even dealing with positive things like attraction. Sometimes when we like someone a lot, want to become their friend, that in itself is stressful. We find some of the same physiological reactions taking place. We find ourselves feeling our heart pound, being worried about how we might come across to them, how we sound, and so on. So interpersonal relationships is another key area that research has shown that we often find stress. Another area, additionally, is the area of family relationships. Who of us hasn't faced stress in the family? Trying to deal with things that are positive, like a marriage or a new birth or even a job promotion that requires our family to move to a new area, creates lots of issues that somehow we have to cope with, those demands placed on us. Family is an area of stress. Now, maybe a subset of family is the area of marital stress. That's the stress that goes on between us and our spouse. Somehow, as we relate to our spouse over the span of the life cycle, our spouse and ourselves have to face many different problems and difficulties that we have to find out how we're going to deal with it and come to some sort of joint decision. For most of us, even when that works fairly smoothly, we put lots of energy into that. We find ourselves, again, experiencing some of the physiological correlates to stress, sometimes feeling the knot in our stomach. Finding ourselves giving that physiological expression of stress, the sigh, taking a deep breath, feeling ourselves under pressure in the marriage relationship. Now, another area of stress that research has shown that most of us experience is that area that I will call intrapersonal stress. That's the stress that's inside of us as we relate to ourselves. Like the examples that we've talked about at work, whenever we're behind in our performance at work, we mentioned that somehow that will affect the way that we see ourselves. So sometimes how we feel about ourselves, whether we have poor self-esteem, whether we start to lose confidence in our ability, that's that area of intrapersonal stress. That is how we feel about ourselves. Another area of stress that I will add is that area of spiritual stress. Now, that's an interesting idea to think about. Sometimes we don't think of our spiritual lives as producing stress. But think back to the time when you were first confronted with the gospel and you were weighing up its demands on you, what kind of impact or reaction you found yourself going through. Sometimes when people are under conviction and trying to deal with whether they want to receive Christ or not, go through a tremendously stressful time. And then think back after you received Christ, the kind of changes that it demanded on you in terms of the areas that we've already mentioned, how you related at work to coworkers, what you did in your marriage, also how you related to your children, your finances, etc. So sometimes our spiritual lives are a source of stress. Certainly that's true when all of us have experienced that occasion when we find ourselves committing some sort of sin that we come under conviction for. And before we really get to the place where we want to deal with it, we resist. Certainly that produces stress in our lives. Now I would like to turn our attention to sort of that second area that I mentioned before that I want to think about a little bit. That is that of what we might expect callers to say as they call in that might be experiencing some sort of stress reaction or stress disorder. So we've covered background issues. We now want to focus a little bit on what we might expect a caller to say as they would call in. Now, oftentimes, callers, as they call in, will not call up and say, gee, I'm experiencing a stress disorder. Can you help me? Instead, they will give you cues or clues that will lead you to start to ask the question, I wonder if this caller may be experiencing a lot of stress. The first general area that a caller might come in and or call you and start to express concerns about is that area of emotional complaints. Now think back to some of the background issues that we've talked about, stress and how stress impacts a person. We talked about how emotions are affected by stress. Oftentimes a caller calling in with some sort of stress problem will tell you, give you those clues of those emotional red flags that may indicate they're under stress. For instance, a caller might call in and say, you know, I've been feeling depressed kind of chronically. In fact, for the last 4 or 5 months, I've been depressed and I just don't know what is causing it. A little red flag should go up in your mind. Stress over time produces depression sometimes. So I wonder if this person is experiencing a stress reaction of some sort. A second thing that a caller might say, or people that come into my office as a psychologist will often drop that clue that indicates that they may be experiencing a stress disorder, is that they may feel anxious. A caller might say, boy, I am so worried. I find myself trying to go to sleep at night and I have things on my mind, thinking about work or my family, and I just can't go to sleep. Again, that red flag pops up and it should create the question in your mind, I wonder if I'm hearing a pattern of stress, that this person may be experiencing some sort of stress-related symptom. Of course, we mentioned that sometimes emotionally stress produces that feeling of being overwhelmed. You may hear a caller say, I just feel like I can't cope any longer. I have these problems at home or at work or with neighbors or friends. I've just been married and I just don't know what to do. I don't know if I can solve the problem. Again, it may be a stress reaction. A caller might complain of tension as well. Now, oftentimes tension will manifest itself in various ways. A caller might say, I just have these chronic feelings of stiffness in the back of my neck, or I have this knot in the pit of my stomach, or sometimes I feel like I can't breathe. Those may be indications of tension. Remember we said that sometimes a person under stress may get a short fuse. A caller may say, things are so tense around our house and I find myself sort of blowing up all of the time. Again, that should send off a little red flag in your mind. I wonder if this caller might be experiencing some sort of stress-related reaction. Another thing that a caller might complain of is being worried about a specific area, and also they may complain of those physiological correlates that we've mentioned earlier. I find myself with my heart beating fast, perspiring. I find myself in a heightened state of awareness. I find myself tingling or pumped up or wired, and I just can't come down. Again, a red flag should go up to say this might be a stress disorder. A last area or two that I would like to talk about is that area of headaches and stomach or intestinal kinds of tension. Usually when we're under stress in a chronic sense for a long enough period of time, our physiological systems start to show that. Headaches is one area. Oftentimes the site of headaches will be around the temples. People oftentimes will complain of a band tight around their head. Another physiological area that's often a red flag for stress-related reactions is our stomach or intestines. People will complain of ulcers. That's often a key giveaway. Or they'll complain of constipation or diarrhea or feeling bloated. Those are all physiological correlates of some sort of stress reaction. When you find a caller reporting those, or upon probing, if they reveal that, if you ask the question, do you experience frequent headaches? And they say yes, that might be your clue that this is a stress reaction. Additionally, callers sometimes will complain of chronic tiredness. They will say things like, gee, I find myself sleeping and I just can't get enough rest. I sleep enough, but somehow I wake up in the morning still tired. Oftentimes, when we're under chronic stress, that's a key indicator. We've already mentioned it, but I'll cover it again, stiff necks. When we have that tension across our shoulders and the back of our neck, oftentimes that's an indication for most of us that we've been under stress. Now I want to turn our attention a little bit to specific areas of stress that you might probe a caller in to determine, is this a stress reaction? Sometimes callers will complain of these general symptoms, and then they'll complain of specific areas of stress upon probing. For instance, you might say, well, it seems like that you're experiencing a lot of symptoms that might indicate that you're under stress. I wonder if you feel stress in specific areas. And of course, oftentimes a caller will say, yeah, at work, I'm just under so much pressure. Sometimes I don't know what to do. So those are the clues or the cues as a caller might call in that I would encourage you to allow those red flags to go off in your mind to say, I wonder if this is a stress reaction. So those are the things that a caller might say. We've covered background issues. We've covered what you might find a caller saying. Now let us turn our attention in the time that we have remaining to a counseling strategy. First of all, I would like to encourage you to think of this mental outline as you pick up that phone call and think about a strategy for yourself on dealing with a person who might be experiencing a stress reaction or other kinds of reactions. The first is, I need to become an active listener. What is active listening? Well, active listening, as the name implies, is where you as the listener tries to interact with, in an active way with the caller. So it's just not silence on the end of the phone. I'm going to suggest a couple of goals of active listening. The first of those is to gather information. Oftentimes when we are actively listening to a person, we can offer them probes that will help us gain information that will allow us to really kind of isolate or determine what that caller might be experiencing. So as you actively listen, think about one of the purposes of doing this is to gather information. A second purpose is to help the person who's calling feel understood. You know, that's critical anytime we enter into a counseling relationship with someone. The person that's coming to us has to feel like that we understand them and care about them. Active listening helps that. So, when we try to actively listen, first of all, use empathetic responses. A response like that might be, boy, it sounds like that you're under a lot of pressure. That will often feel a person that you've really heard what they've said. The second part of active listening, or a pointer in actively listening, is don't give advice too early. That's a tendency for all of us. When we hear someone hurting or in a dilemma, there's a natural reaction in us to somehow give them a piece of advice that will help them solve their problem. If we do that too soon, oftentimes the person will feel like, boy, you haven't listened to me long enough that I really feel understood, and oftentimes people will start to shut down. So listen, giving active and empathetic responses, don't give advice too soon. And a third portion or part of active listening is asking the person to somehow clarify their thinking. Oftentimes that is in the form of questions that are open-ended and probing. You've mentioned that you might say to a caller, you've mentioned that you've experienced stress at work. I wonder if there are other areas that you feel pressure. Well, as you ask that question, I find myself saying, yeah, at home, I feel stress at home in my marriage, or my adolescent son is in trouble at school, and I'm worried about that. A response like that will help the person clarify their thinking. I have stress not only at work, but also at home. So active listening has with it the goal of somehow bonding with the person, somehow collecting information, helping them feel understood, and then to help them to clarify their thinking. Now, as you enter that second stage or outline in our outline of counseling the person, we've said that it's important to somehow help the person feel understood, to actively listen. And we've talked about that kind of third part of that, that is clarifying their thinking. That's sort of a bridge into that second phase, I will say, of counseling. So the first part is actively listening, helping the person feel understood. And the second stage, I will call that clarifying the person's thinking. That's when you add those probes that will help the person think about different areas that they might be experiencing those problems in. I've already mentioned some questions that you might use, like, I wonder if there are other areas that are experiencing this difficulty. Another question when we're thinking about stress-related disorders in specific, you might ask that question about physiological correlates. Have you found yourself feeling some sort of physical problem lately, like headaches? Or have you found your stomach upset? Or have you ever found yourself having that knot in your stomach? Of course, as the person responds in the positive to that, that gives you one more clue to the fact that this may be a stress disorder. Now, let me add sort of a parenthetical remark here. One of the purposes in your counseling strategy, of course, is to provide some understanding to the person, but to also point them toward the gospel. As you gather information in areas of the person's life where they may be experiencing stressful events, I would encourage you in the back of your mind to be thinking about what I will call bridges for the gospel. For instance, if the person is experiencing a lot of difficulty at the home front, one of the things that might be a window of entry for the gospel is talking some about what the Bible has to say about homes and families and marriages. If the person is feeling overwhelmed and sort of powerless, of course, there's a bridge there that you should file away that when you get to the point where you want to turn the person toward the gospel that you might use. So as you clarify the person's thinking, think about those bridges for the gospel. Now let's think about that last stage in the counseling process that I will call pointing the person in a direction. So you've actively listened, You've clarified the person's thinking, you've gathered some information, and you have some bridges in your mind that you want to move the person toward to present the gospel. For instance, one bridge that you might use with a person in a stress-related sort of problem, you might say something like this. You know, you've talked about being under a lot of stress, and it helps most of us to talk to someone that really cares about us when we're under stress. I wonder if you have people in your life that you might be able to talk to about this. If the person says, well, you know, I really don't. I don't feel like there's anyone to turn to. A response that might help them start to bridge toward the gospel would be, I wonder if you have a pastor or someone at your church that you might feel comfortable talking to. The person says no, you might suggest that. You know, pastors are often used to listening to people, providing some comfort and understanding. You might consider finding a pastor in your area that you feel comfortable with, that you can talk to about the pressures that you're under. Of course, if the person is feeling alone, that's a perfect bridge to the gospel. I wonder if you've ever thought about talking to God about the problems that you're experiencing. Well, gee, I really don't know how to talk to God. Well, let me share with you a few things from the Bible that might point a direction for you about what God says about how to come to Him. As you can see by those illustrations, gathering information earlier in the call as you probe the different areas that a person might be experiencing some pain or difficulty in may provide those windows or bridges of opportunity to begin to, in a very natural, non-forced way, begin to bridge the gap toward the gospel, a presentation of the gospel. I often find that whenever people are experiencing difficulty, they feel isolated. So that probe that will lead them toward talking to someone, a pastor, Sunday school teacher, a friend, a family member, and then God, is a very easy bridge to make. I would encourage you to think about that. Now, let me cover sort of a last area that I think it's always important when we counsel people to be aware of. That is, sometimes people, like with stress disorders, will experience difficulties that they need some sort of professional help with. If you find a person under chronic stress, having lots of stomach difficulties, stiff necks, they feel overwhelmed and depressed to the point where they may feel like they're despairing, there's no way out, of course, that's a cue to say they're probably going to need more help than I can provide them on the phone. When you find yourself kind of saying to yourself, this person needs more help, somewhere in the conversation, begin to suggest that they contact a professional. You know, it sounds like that these problems have been in your life for a long time. Maybe you need to see a pastor who can point you in a direction where you can get some help, or you have a lot of physiological problems. Maybe you need to see your doctor. Another thing that you might suggest is, have you ever thought about seeing a professional counselor? You can be a great help to people on the phone by listening to them, by bridging them to the gospel, and by pointing them in a direction.